Well, good morning. The festival is in full swing. Yesterday had the opportunity to go to the festival after the 4 p.m. Mass, and we had quite a crowd. It was it's a great turnout so far, so I'd encourage you all, if you haven't been over, to take advantage of the time today to go over. It's a great thing to recognize Polish heritage in our culture. I was speaking with Marianne Robinson this past week about the festival and so on, and it was in her heart to share that she hopes that it is a great evangelistic tool, and that it's really a Jackson area festival that we should open up to, that we're open to everyone. And so I just encourage you to go today. The music's a little loud, but it's great. It's just great. And I think Father Brian said yesterday that it probably isn't a sin, but you should have at least one beer, right? Okay? But it's great. But, you know, Polish heritage is so much more. You know, you drive by and you look out and you see, well, we have the kibasa and the polkas and all the things there, and people think that's it. Well, no. That's a part, a small part of the heritage. The real core, the real heart of Polish heritage is the Catholic faith. You look at the world today, everywhere you look on the globe, what nation is glued together by the Catholic faith like Poland? We don't see it anywhere like in that same way. Look what's come out of Poland. St. John Paul the Great, St. Maximilian Kolbe, St. Faustina, Divine Mercy. And the power of the Polish people collectively in solidarity, in part in their resistance to the oppressive Soviet, communist, atheist regime, stood firm, and their faith overcame that power. And some of us that were of age, and there are quite a few of us here, saw that wall come down in Berlin. And I know in my heart that it was more complicated than just their solidarity resistance, but it was there, and that was a major part of their overcoming that oppression. Well, today we have a gospel that I can relate to quite personally. 2 weeks ago, as I was vesting for the 10 a.m. Mass, 10 a.m. rolled by, and Andy, our director of operations, and our servers and EMs were back in the sacristy, wondering where the priest was and who the priest would be. And 10:05, 10:10, nobody was there. What are we going to do? Somebody said, let's do a rosary. Let's do this. They said, well, we could have a communion service. I went out to the tabernacle. There was the one ciborium that had 30 to 40 hosts in it. I says, well, that's really not an option. We've got a large crowd of people, and we're not going to be able to break all these. It would be just too. So our dean of servers, Clay, said, I'll go over to St. Joseph, where the 9:30 Mass had been, probably at the communion point, and we could probably get some reserve hosts and bring back in a ciborium to have our communion service. So we said, okay. So we went to the back of the church, and we started Mass. And we came forward without a priest, and we had the liturgy of the word, and we were getting down to the end of the liturgy of the word, and I was looking around, and there was nobody here. And Clay came out from the sacristy and said, Father Paul's here. Yes. You know, he didn't bring a ciborium. He brought better. He brought Father Paul, who came right off of the 9:30 and got here just in the nick of time at the liturgy of the Eucharist, and we seamlessly went through the Mass. And I collapsed. But it was an amazing experience. And so I can't help but see some of that in this gospel today. Because here you have this seemingly impossible situation. You've got 5,000 men, probably 5,000 women, and thousands of children as well, in this huge gathering, this following after Jesus, because they had seen the power of his work and his miracles and the way he was touching and healing people's lives. They were hungry. It was lunchtime, if you will. And here they are. And Jesus, and I see a sense of humor in him. I can't help it but see this. Philip, where are we going to buy enough food for these people? And Philip is probably, I don't know, we haven't got any money. We don't have enough money. It would take 200 days, two-thirds of a year, basically, of work to give these people just a little bit to eat. We don't have enough money to do that. But Jesus knew what he was going to do. He knew exactly what he was going to do, but yet he threw this out to test Philip. And then Andrew chimes in, and he comes in with this idea, well, hey, you know, we've got this little kid over here, and he's got a 5 loaves of barley bread and a couple dried fish. And he says, well, that's probably a dumb idea, you know. How's that going to work with all these people, he's saying. You know, it's just not going to work. But here you have the situation. Insufficient funds, insufficient food, and a hungry multitude. And that's a recipe for a crisis. Jesus says, bring the loaves here. Bring the fish. The little boy brings an offering, if you will, and in the hands of Jesus, they are offered, they are blessed, they are broken, and they are multiplied to feed a multitude with leftovers. 12 wicker baskets left over. The first parish, all-you-can-eat fish dinner, right there on the mountain. It must have been a sight. It must have been quite a sight to see. And when Jesus gave thanks, the word in Greek there in that passage is Eucharistio, which is in all of the Gospels. This miracle appears in all 4 of the Gospels. That and the resurrection are the only miracles that appear in all of the Gospels. And here in this Gospel of John, he's foreshadowing the Eucharist in this miracle, and he uses the exact word, that John uses the word Eucharistio, feeding the multitudes. The point here, I think that we can draw, is that oftentimes we are not sufficient. Some people have delusions of grandeur. I think I have delusions of adequacy at times. If we think that we are sufficient and that we've got it all together and that we can do this on our own, we are wrong. I think this miracle gives us a keen insight into how insufficient we are and how that is enough. And that's the word that struck me as I meditated on this gospel this week. It's a paradox. Insufficient, enough. Insufficiently enough. We may not be everything that we could be. We may have shortcomings. We may not be able to do things the way we would like to, or have a sense of command in what we do. But it is enough for God. Our lives are enough for him to take and to give thanks and to break us and to give us to our families, to our co-workers, to our friends. St. Paul, the apostle, the great apostle, the great missionary, knew this He knew this principle very, very, if anybody had an opportunity to boast, it would be, I would think, Paul. And there was a time when in his ministry when he was pushed to that point where he had to boast, but he said, I'm acting like a fool in saying this, because he never would have done that. But he was pushed into it to testify what he had gone through to complete his apostolic missionary ministry. And he said, we are the aroma of Christ among those who are being saved and among those who are perishing. To one, a fragrance from death to death. To the other, a fragrance from life to life. Who is sufficient for these things? Rhetorically, he's nobody. Even the Apostle Paul. Who is sufficient to bring the faith, the aroma, the beauty of Jesus Christ to this world? Who is sufficient to do that? He asks. And he answers it. He answers his own question a little further on down, where he says, not that we are sufficient of ourselves to claim anything as coming from us. Our competence is from God, who has made us competent to be ministers of a new covenant. So we by ourselves are insufficient, but our lives in the hands of Jesus are blessed, broken, and distributed as bread to the world.